Hey Brian, hey Rick, Shooter McGavin here on a Masters weekend, day two. Wow. So I heard your From the Tips podcast is kind of badass.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of From the Tips. It is me, boy Brian, always joined, and this time with a little bit more high technology, by my co-host Rick Landis. Rick, not only do you have a new microphone, but you have some power at your fingertips. I'm not going to say what.
Yeah,
it's going to be a mystery until it comes time. But
yeah, I do have a new microphone. Gina made the decision that our old microphones weren't what we needed, so we got new actual podcasting microphone, so hopefully the audio is not too bad. We're still kind of trying to figure out the kinks. This is our test run, so if there's a little bit of an echo, I apologize, and we'll get it fixed for next time. But as of right now, we think it's as good as it's going to get with what we have. So for now, bear with us if it's bad. If not, welcome.
Welcome to the show. We think that it's all right as of right now. We did a little test recording. I thought it sounded okay for what we were able to do. I wasn't super I could probably edit some things in post if need be, but who knows? Personally, I think it sounds all right. But so we have some higher technology on the podcast now, which is interesting to say the least, because who'd have thunk it? Who'd have thunk we'd be here? You have a microphone attached to an arm. You know, you look like
it's literally on my desk.
Like, is it one of those ones that like kind of has like a little screw joint on the desk, and then
and I can just like move it around.
Awesome. Yeah. So the thing about swivel mics and what you might have happen at some point is when you start getting comfortable with them, you just like always keep a hand on it and you just swivel it with your body because you think
I probably will do that. At some point. It's fun. It's nice because we have two of them now that are going to hook up separately, so when Gina and I do spill the D, we can have our own microphones and like be sitting comfortably with them, because
right,
we can sit kind of far back and still have a microphone. Nice.
Yeah, that I mean it's always good to have that kind of flexibility when podcasting in the same space. Luckily, we're in two separate spaces, so we don't have to have I'm guessing because they're podcast mics, there's no feedback in the room as well. So.
What do you mean?
Like when you guys have two microphones.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. We're going to find out tomorrow when we record Spill the D. But as of right now, I have no idea.
Well, my guess is they're omnidirectional, so you should be okay. But to continue moving forward here, welcome, everybody. We had the RBC Heritage and some playoff golf that was gut-wrenching. However, as is tradition, and will stay tradition here on this podcast, Rick, buddy, what happened in sports history today?
All right. So, I mean, it's the 18th of April. Apparently, it's summer based on the weather outside right now, which means that summer things are happening. A lot of Boston marathons in history on this day.
Do you know it's Patriot Day? I didn't know that was a thing. So, Patriot Day is, like, celebrated only in New England, and it's, like, the Red Sox play at 10 in the morning. There's the Boston Marathon after that. And there's something else or something like that. But like, I had never known about this until my coworker who's from Vermont originally said something, because he was watching the Boston Marathon. And I was like, you're not a runner. What's the interest in this? He's like, it's just something that you do on Patriot Day. I went, all right, good enough.
You're just there.
Anyway, the Boston Marathon.
So, yeah, Boston Marathon, a lot of those happened. 1946, Jackie Robinson debuts as the second baseman for the Montreal Royals.
Oh, yeah.
So that's pretty big.
We just had Jackie Robinson Day in the
we did. Everybody was wearing 42. Yeah. It was nice. What else do we got here? Baseball record. That one popped up here. Sandy Koufax strikes out outside on 9 pitches.
Whoa, the immaculate inning.
Yeah.
Was that the first immaculate inning or just one of them? Is it the first one?
It says for Major League best third time in his career. So apparently not the first time.
Definitely it wasn't even the first in his career.
Yeah, they started the first time he did it.
I mean, so that's already crazy out the gate. Could you imagine just having that, like, having that kind of talent where all you require to get in and out of an inning is 9 pitches?
Dude, I wish that. I wish any Phillies pitcher could do that right now.
Any of them. That'd be great. That'd be lovely.
30 pitches, that'd be so nice.
Yeah, 30 pitches after one inning. Thanks. Thanks so much.
We got 1987. Mike Schmidt hit his 500th home run.
The Schmitter. Gotta love it.
Lots of baseball stuff besides the Boston Marathon. Lots of Boston Marathon.
Well, I'm assuming it's probably going to be mostly baseball stuff going through the summer. I mean, that's.
Oh, here we go. 1998. Here NFL we go. Draft happened today.
Oh, look at that. Who was in the first overall? Yes. Oh, damn it. No, I'd 1998. Shit. Tom Brady.
No.
Yeah, I know. I know. Also, he wasn't even the first round. I don't think it would, like. Fuck it. Drew Bledsoe?
No. I'll give you a hint. He's compared to Peyton. Or not Peyton. I just told you it's Peyton Manning.
Oh, so it's Peyton Manning?
It's Peyton Manning.
would you go out on a limb and say that Peyton Manning is compared to Peyton Manning?
It's something that some people might say. Not me, because I'm better with words than that, but some people might say that.
Some may say. It's definitely impossible. I wanted to guess Brett Favre, but also, like, I think he was playing in 98. I think he was, like, a bona fide starter at that point. So, yeah, I mean, football, not one of my best sports of knowledge as far as historical knowledge, I should say. I have plenty now, but what was that?
Draft is in 10 days.
I know. Are you excited?
I don't even know how to feel right now.
I mean, do you guys have that first pick, baby?
But, like, I don't know that I necessarily want any of these guys at number one overall. We could have sat at 9 and gotten someone that's going to do just as well. I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard when you have your franchise go out of their way to get that first overall pick, do the things that pretty much any sports fan of a team who struggled the last year would like to have happen, and then not have, like, a generational talent.
Yeah, like, I feel like if we just didn't make that trade and we stayed at 9, with how much Levis's stock is falling right now, we could have had DJ Moore, a pretty decent wide receiver in the second round, still signed, like, Adam Thielen, and then Will Levis would have been just as good as having CJ Stroud with nobody, you know? So, like, that's kind of where my thought process is at right now, but.
Yeah, but and now you have Adam Thielen as your replacement.
Yeah.
And a young quarterback who's never played in the league before. I mean, look, it could go really well. CJ Stroud could be an absolutely phenomenal player in the NFL. Look, I had doubts about Jalen Hurts' ability to be an NFL quarterback, and here we are. The dude just got paid today. So, dude just got paid. The options are endless.
Guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because I can already feel it by the time the Flyers wind up being bad enough to get a first pick. Maybe there's not going to be a generational like Connor Bedard's not going to reincarnate and come back, and Connor McDavid's not going to be one of those. Yeah, he's going to be wherever he goes, and it's probably going to be. Is Columbus the worst team?
Is he the next McDavid? Is that what's going on there? Okay,
arguably could be better. He broke Connor McDavid's junior points in a season record. So, but like at 170, which is ridiculous. But you know, yeah, it's pretty nuts. So it's basically just a generational talent that the Flyers will never get near touch ever. You know, we'll maybe get somebody who plays hockey, possibly. I'm not sure. Probably not, to be honest with you, because you know, one of our supposedly franchise changing assets, who's a goaltender, just got sent to Siberia to serve for the government. So, you know, yeah, it couldn't be any better. It really couldn't.
Great time to be a Flyers fan.
I mean, you know, at least we got those 76ers, who I believe are playing tonight. Have you watched any of the NBA playoffs? I mean, I know. But your fiance's dad super into basketball. I didn't know if by proxy you might have watched any. Yeah.
What happens is on Sundays we watch sports.
Right.
Everybody hangs out with the kids, me, Tommy, and Gina's dad watch sports. I watch when golf and baseball and football are on. The minute basketball comes on, I'm out. I leave.
I'm hanging out with the kiddos.
That's exactly what happens, because I just have no interest in it whatsoever. I know they're playing tonight. I know they're up 1-0 in the series. I know Vanessa and Sarah are there, and I'm not really sure why, but they're there. And I don't know. Maybe they'll win. Maybe they won't. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, for what it's worth, for anybody who is like a sports fan, game one of the Islanders-Kane series is about to start. So, and for those of you that have yet to hitch a wagon to an NHL team because your favorite team might not be in the playoffs, Carolina Hurricanes is the way to go. Hitched on that wagon immediately. Did not take long for me.
I'm like halfway there just because of the Panthers. So like,
yeah,
I just stay in the state, you know what I mean?
Okay, for sure. And then also the fact that, you know, they have Brett Burns, former San Jose Shark. They have Shane Gostisbehere, the one that got away, if you're a Flyers fan. And also, like, the vibes on that team are so good, and they beat the Bruins in the playoffs last year. So it's just, they're always going to have a piece of my heart a little
plus
bit there.
Plus, fuck the Islanders.
Plus, fuck the Islanders. is that, like, a direct jab at one of our podcasting rivals from Foreplay, Frankie Borelli?
I mean, if we can consider ourselves rivals with them, I mean, they're a whole different universe, but yeah, sure.
You claiming that we're not? Look, all they have is a partnership with TaylorMade and a multi-million dollar brand and access to Masters coverage and partnered with the PGA Tour. Yeah, we got a new mic, people, okay?
And I got something else that hasn't made its appearance yet, but it will.
But it's new and shiny, right? I mean, come on. You got to feel good for the podcast. But we've already wasted approximately 10 minutes of your time, you sweet, sweet, poor listeners. But we are going to get into the golf here, as golf did happen this last weekend. That's right, folks. After the Masters, they still play golf professionally. It is weird. I know. I get it. But
I like that was a good spot.
I think that was a solid spot for that. Yeah, that's right, folks. Somebody gave Rick enough power to have a sound effects board.
Don't know who thought that was a good idea.
Terrible
sound effects, baby.
Terrible idea. Terrible idea. I think one of the effects that I look forward to using the most is we might start this segment where we talk to the golf gods, because we're all always mad at the golf gods, right? So we want to ask them some questions,
yeah,
right? And so, you know, here, I'll tap in now. We haven't started this segment yet. We got to do some writing on this because we want to have some bits. But, like, golf gods, you there? You up there? Doesn't sound like they were.
No, they're not there.
I hate you.
I don't know what button I pressed when we did that one.
No, they throw the echo all the way up.
Hello.
Oh, hey, you there, golf gods? You there?
Yeah.
Hey, just a quick question. You know, we're meeting just now. My name's Brian. You know, I just want to ask you, what is it with the three putts, man?
You suck at golf.
Okay, thanks. We'll talk next week, buddy. See you then.
Bye.
So, yeah, you know, we're going to start having conversations with the golf gods. So it's going to be great. But they did have golf this last weekend at the RBC Heritage in Hilton Head Island, South Carolina. A absolutely gorgeous course. I love this event. It's super cool there. Big fan of the lighthouse. The jacket. Would you argue I know the green jacket has a lot of history, etc., all that jazz, right? Which jacket would you rather be showing off to your buddies when you're like, I want a golf tournament, right? Like, just off of vibes alone, a boring green jacket with some yellow thrown in there, or a deeply lumberjack plaid.
I'm cutting the sleeves jacket. Off immediately if I win that
you
one.
Have to, right? You're going to look like Morgan Wallen. Immediately. Yeah.
And like, I'm just playing golf in that.
Just next year when you come back, inevitably, first day, Thursday,
shorts,
cuts
have been... and the jacket with the sleeves cut off. That's what I'm playing.
Yes. Yes. The weird scent of stale cigarettes. It's Yeah, your playing partner's going to be like, yep, this is...
Just an axe in my bag.
I mean, I love the jacket at the RBC. I think it's one of the cooler trophies that they have in professional golf. And there's a couple of really cool trophies in professional golf. And, you know, one thing that the RBC Heritage has suffered with in the past, because it's the following the Masters, is, you know, not having people super excited to watch it. I'm not going to lie. If you just look at the top four finishers in here with Xander Schauffele in fourth, Patrick Cantlay in third, Jordan Spieth in second, and Matt Fitzpatrick the winner, and a three-hole playoff, this is incredibly exciting golf.
Yeah, the leaderboard was stacked, which was great to see. And yeah, it was all people that you could want to cheer for.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll get into the one. We'll get into that. He's had a little bit of some issues here recently himself, but we got to talk about the winner. Obviously, Matty Fitzpatrick went and won in a playoff against Jordan Spieth of all people. Look, Jordan Spieth looked really good at the Masters. He had that Sunday charge at the lead there, finished in the top five at the Masters, and turned it right around and showed off here in the RBC as well. And here's the problem. It's not like his putting has been bad. It's not like it's been historically bad. That is so painful when in two of the playoff holes, you lip out.
You got a chance to win it and you lip out.
So tough. That's so tough.
It's tough to win with that happening to you, because it's one of those things where if you give your opponent enough opportunities, they're going to take advantage of it. That's exactly what happened.
Right. And you would think like, it's just you're thinking, could it get worse, right? I had two good lines. They were good putts. They had good speed. And it just didn't drop twice in the same playoff. That's tough on the mental right there. Because you were, I mean, you said it beautifully. You had two chances to win, right? Tied on the first, almost had the birdie. Tied on the second, almost had the birdie, almost had the W, and then boom, Matt Fitzpatrick gets the birdie on the third playoff hole, and that's it. There goes the tournament. You're in second now.
Yeah, Fitzpatrick sticks that approach shot, and it's over. I mean, like, literally the only way you're going to do anything is get it within 5 feet, and under, like, that much pressure, it doesn't matter how good you are. You just lift out two holes in a row.
Yep.
That's a lot. That's a lot of pressure to come back from, and seeing the guy that you just let stay in this match, make that kind of shot, is gonna rattle you.
Yeah, that's definitely tough on the mentals when you are coming back from those two poor putts, yeah. and you watch him just stick that approach shot, and you're like, well, no matter where I put this, I'm not gonna be able to drop the putt. I can put it 3 feet away, it's just not gonna go for me. Yeah. So that's always tough. But obviously, congratulations to Matt Fitzpatrick, the braced wonder, mouth like a middle schooler. I wasn't always a massive Matthew Fitzpatrick fan. In fact, I wasn't really a Matthew Fitzpatrick fan at all. I always thought he was kind of like Bryson DeChambeau, numbers nerd, kind of way too into the stats and like trying to make golf more of a numbers game than it is, you know, a beautiful game, right, in a way. And what I learned from the Full Swing documentary was, yeah, he is that kind of guy, but also, like, he's relatable. He wants to be good at golf. The only thing that he does differently than everybody else, it's not like he's taking nonstop, you know, protein and doing all the gym stuff, is he's just using the numbers at his disposal with his trainers to make his swing better. But when he's out there on the course, he's not like going through equations in his brain. He's thinking about, okay, this is my shot here, this is my shot there. So I kind of started to like him a bit better. And so him winning this tournament, I didn't really mind. But I want to ask you, Rick, do you think he won this tournament or do you think Jordan Spieth lost it?
I think it's about as equal as you can get for, for both golfers. Jordan Spieth did lose it, but also Fitzpatrick had to stay in it and keep himself in the game until Jordan Spieth slipped up enough. And that's what happened. And I think some of the misconception with how, and I'm sure you're not the only person that felt that way about Matt Fitzpatrick before. I think some of the misconception comes from his lack of success on the PGA Tour, but the fact that he's always talked about as one of these people who always has a chance to win. And it comes down to he's won, I think, 8 times on the DP World Tour, and this is just his second PGA Tour victory. So it's like, it's one of those things where like he does win, just not on the PGA Tour. So, and he's not from America. So like, obviously a lot of the people watching PGA Tour golf are Americans. So like, we want to cheer for the Americans. And we're like, why are people so hyped on this guy? He's not even winning on the PGA Tour, but he is winning, just not on the PGA Tour.
I think
he's an incredibly likable guy. I don't see any reason why anyone would hate him. But I think that's just what it comes down to, is the fact that we don't see his success enough over here on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, I mean, you've seen the same arguments about like guys like Tommy Fleetwood who do, you know, and Tyrrell Hatton from time to time, who do a lot of winning on the European side, but just can't seem to have the same success over here on the PGA Tour. I mean, Matt Fitzpatrick now has a major under his belt and an RBC Heritage. Like, he's got 2 PGA Tour wins, one of them being a major. I mean, I'm going to need 1 to 2 more wins before I'm like, okay, he's somebody that can have consistent success on the PGA Tour, but he's heading in the right direction, right? Not everybody has their first tour win being a major, so can't argue too much there.
The good news for him is I'm not sure exactly how much people get paid on the DP World Tour when they win, but the good news for him is his 2 wins on the PGA Tour, one of them, like you said, is a major, which always has a higher purse, and the second one, the RBC, was one of these elevated events where the purses are higher. So at least financially, he's in a good spot going forward as the rest of the season progresses to be able to play the events that he wants and needs to without having to worry about the money like he may have had to do in the past without actually getting wins on the PGA Tour.
Right. And as much as I never like to be like, oh, you know, instead of winning a tournament, I think the other guy lost the tournament, it's hard for me to look at this one and say that Jordan Spieth didn't lose it just because of the way that those putts rolled on the first 2 playoff holes. It's hard to be like literally 1 centimeter more on either of those putts, the putts in, you know?
So I get what you're saying.
But you know, Matt Fitzpatrick stayed even keeled and got it done. He got his 2 pars when he was able to make it. And then he stuck that one on the third hole on the third playoff hole and boom, it was over. So it takes a solid golfer to do that as well. So I look, all sorts of respect for Matt Fitzpatrick and getting it done, getting the plaid jacket, and also, you know, just emerging as one of the better European golfers to come over from that side. Because really the last guy from that side of golf that you were like, yeah, this guy is going to make an impact here on the PGA Tour, probably Shane Lowry. You know, I mean, Shane's got some wins. He has a major.
Yeah.
And Rory came before him. So I was going to say Rory, but I didn't want to disrespect my dude Shane like that, you know? Yeah. I mean, obviously John Rahm, but like that's.
Yeah, I mean, there's guys. Territory. But I think with how young Fitzpatrick is, I think he's definitely going to be that guy going forward. Especially now that we've seen that he knows how to win. Because we talked about it at length. Everybody says it all the time. Once you figure out how you need to play to win a tournament, it becomes so much easier, especially when you're as good of a golfer and have as much talent as Matt Fitzpatrick does. So I can definitely see him winning maybe even one more tournament this year. But I think going forward, I think he's going to have a lot more success just because he knows how to do it.
Yeah, and he's super young. So he's got nothing but time ahead of him. He's got an entire career on the horizon. So he's got plenty of time to really solidify himself on the PGA Tour. So congrats to Matt Fitzpatrick on that W at the RBC. Getting it done this season with a W. Here's a little note from the RBC Heritage here that happened. John Rahm wound up finishing his Sunday round in 15th and then hopped on the CBS broadcast for about the last 20 minutes of the tournament and provided commentary, which I thought was definitely an interesting twist to have literally the guy that just won the Masters a week ago finish up his round and hop on the broadcast. I really enjoyed it. I thought he gave some really cool insight while he was doing that. But I wanted to ask you, Rick, what is your opinion on the, I guess you could say, current golfer commentary? I just like the way that he was talking about shots and stuff where he was.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely specific to whatever golfer they would have on there. John Rahm was a great guy to have on there because he's one of the best golfers in the world right now, if not the best. I don't know. He might be at number one now. I'm not sure.
Right.
But he is up there as one of the best golfers in the world, and he loves the game. Like after all that happened, they were asking him about it and stuff, and he was like, "Look, I just love the game of golf. Like, I want to get as much of it as I can. I'll say I'm taking a day off, and in the afternoon I'll be chipping." That was like almost the direct quote from him,
which is awesome. That's just awesome.
Yeah. So it's nice to have those kind of guys on because you can see how excited they are not only about golf but about the PGA Tour as a whole. Because even when he knows he has no chance of winning, he still wants to get on and watch what's happening and keep being into golf.
Which is awesome because, yeah, a lot of guys could be upset with it. Like, you just won a Masters, then you turn around and play the RBC Heritage at obviously a less hard course than Augusta National, and you get 15th. A lot of guys could be sitting at home and be bitter about that, but he decided to hop on the national broadcast and provide some commentary. And I think he did a really good job. Like, obviously, I don't think that he's got like broadcasting chops by any mean like that, but like he provided helpful insight to a lot of shots that were happening. He provided some actual, not play by play, but you know, actual true professional insights that only a PGA Tour professional could give, you know? So,
yeah,
I thought it was cool.
Yeah, now, definitely. I enjoyed it.
Do you think that that's something that could happen more in the future? Do you think it's something that the PGA Tour is going to look at and be like, oh, people seem to enjoy this, we should do this more often? Like, do you think there's going to be more golfers that agree to do that, you know?
Potentially. I don't see there being too many that agree to do that. Honestly, it sounds kind of weird, but I don't see anyone outside the like world top 10 being like, yeah, let me do that. Because the confidence that you have to not win a tournament and then still go on TV right after you don't win that tournament and start talking about golf and the guys that are beating you right now. I mean, you have to have the confidence. Like, that's fine. Like, I know I'm better than these guys. I just didn't play my best this week. Like, the guys that aren't quite at that level are going to go and probably start working right away on figuring out what was wrong with their swing that weekend and like how they can improve and get the win next week kind of thing. So,
right. Yeah. There's guys, like, especially the guys that are in like top five, top 10 in the world who are like, no, I'm one of the best golfers. Like, if I just had an off week, right?
Yeah.
I kind of agree with
sight.
Yeah. I think those are definitely the guys that they could target for this, and then they actually might. But I'm glad you brought up really good golfers who had an off week, because somebody at the Masters had an off week, and that was Rory McIlroy. We talked about that. And you know, you kind of expected him to be like, all right, we have a designated event coming up, another time for me to tee off, you know, turn it around, let's get back on the saddle here. Actually, Rory McIlroy withdrew from the RBC Heritage before it even began, losing $3 million in his actions, because that is his second designated event that he has missed this season. So, as the guy who is the guy of the PGA Tour, right? He's the dude. He represents everybody. He's basically the player's representative across the board. He has now missed two designated events when he's the spearhead for the designated event structure.
Uh-huh.
What kind of story do you think this tells about the designated event structure, the $3 million fee if you miss two in a season, and the fact that the guy who his name is painted all over this idea is the one who's the first to get penalized?
I don't know that it necessarily paints the picture yet, because it's two. So a lot of things can be happening. I think his first one was because of injury. three. I could be wrong about that, but I think his first one.
I think you might be right.
Yeah. So this one, I don't remember hearing anything about why he withdrew. I don't know. Did you hear anything about a reason?
No, I kept trying to find one. Yeah, he didn't specify one.
I didn't see one either. And to me, that's not a reason to worry necessarily, because there's so many things that happen in life, family, friends, everything that can affect your ability to be able to go and spend an entire week somewhere and do something. So I think for the second one, I'm not worried. If he misses another one, then I think we can start to have questions about it. But if the first one was because of injury and we don't have a reason for this one, then I'm kind of questioning what his reasoning is for this one. And I feel like there's probably a good one.
Right. I mean, I do want to give him the benefit of the doubt, right? Rory McIlroy, he's a guy that I like to follow. I think he's a good dude. I think he has the best interest of the PGA Tour in mind. And that's why I think it's good to like support him, right? But I gotta tell you, the optics do not look good here, right? You have to kind of look at this in the big picture and be like, okay, the guy who is basically the main focus of the PGA Tour's efforts moving forward and the main supporter of the PGA Tour's strategy moving forward with the designated events is the first one on tour to get penalized for missing two in the same season. Now, I do believe the first miss was due to injury, and so this would really be his first voluntary miss. So that's why you really want to give him the benefit of the doubt. I think people are, you know, I would say there are people are allowed to have a couple hypocrisies in life, right? But the optics don't look good. They certainly do not look good.
Yeah, no, it's not a great look for him. But again, I don't think there's any reason to start questioning things until there's a third miss, because again, anything can happen. Anything can come up within a week where you're not expecting it. And some things just take precedent over a job and golf.
Right. And it's totally
as of right now, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say that's what it was. If we have a third miss, then I'm going to start questioning it. But
yeah. And you know, when it comes down to it, you're right. There could have been a family matter. He could have just been in a tough mental place from the missed cut at the Masters, where he just needed the time off, and that's totally understandable. We'll probably get an explanation sometime soon. I don't know if he plans on playing the Zurich Classic this week or not, but we'll probably get an explanation next time he gets in front of the media, because the media are a bunch of hungry sharks, and there's blood in the water there, and they're just waiting. You know, like how they hyped up the whole Liv and PGA Tour battle thing at the Masters. They're going to hype up the fact that Rory missed the designated event and got fined for it. So we'll find out an answer soon enough, just not right now. And I think it's probably healthy that we don't pry somebody about why they're missing events. You know, I agree and err on the side of Rick's sentiment here, where I think we're just going to give him the benefit of the doubt and see what he has to say when he gets back in front of the media. But that's all we have. This one kind of toes the line of Masters talk, RBC talk, right? So a specific individual who happened to be in the top five this week at the RBC Heritage, by the way, number three, Patrick Cantlay, Patty Ice. There have been some rumblings about Patrick Cantlay recently, starting mostly at the Masters and now starting even more at the RBC Heritage, of some slow play and some intense slow play, a lot of criticizing. I mean, the Patrick Cantlay Victor Hovland Masters pairing was criticized heavily for their pace of play, and you know, a lot of people are referencing, you know, that was a major factor in Brooks Koepka's kind of fall apart on Sunday, was a slow play directly in front of him. And Victor Hovland was doing his damnedest to get the play to start going faster. He was taking shots while Cantlay was still walking. You know, he was trying to make it go much faster than it was, and it just wasn't happening. But Cantlay defended himself by saying it was slow for everyone, apparently, at the Masters. He said everybody was playing slow. It was a slow day. Not true. You know, you fast forward to Sunday at the RBC Heritage, and, you know, Dottie Pepper said that Spieth and Fitzpatrick were visibly frustrated with how long it was taking Patrick Cantlay to play tricky shots. Especially one outside the penalty area on the 14th green, where he did take about 5 minutes to really size up this shot.
Painful.
It was ridiculous.
It was a great shot, but it was so painful. Dude, just take the drop. Like, yeah, you're not doing anything this week. Just take the drop.
And of course it's going to happen, right? Of course it's going to happen. Where he's the group directly in front of the leaders in both scenarios, right? Where everybody's going to have more of a look on it because we're waiting to watch the leaders shoot. But we have to watch your shots. Yeah. It's been painful, to say the least, the past 2 weeks to watch Patrick Cantlay play Patrick Cantlay golf, I guess you could say. I never knew that he was this slow. This is the first I'm hearing about it. This is the first I've actually like kind of taken a moment to think about it, you know? And like while I was watching, I was like, I guess he is kind of slow. And then the thing on the 14th happened, and I was like, holy, but yeah, something.
Yeah, definitely never really noticed it until people started saying something. And maybe this is something that just kind of started happening. Right. I didn't really notice it until I saw the thing about Happy Gilmore, which I'm sure you also saw, that it took Happy the same amount of time to five putt. Yeah, it took Patrick Cantlay to hit his tee shot.
The side-by-side videos were incredible.
So funny. So yeah, I mean, I didn't really notice it until that even, but I gotta be honest, I don't really care how slow he plays because he has the best sponsor in golf right now. The fact that this man is just rocking a DeWalt bag around the golf course is the greatest thing to happen to golf since Tiger. Like that,
it's so good because it has nothing to do with golf at all. Like I know that I know Tiger has the Monster bag, the Monster Energy bag.
Yeah.
You could argue Monster Energy and caffeine are associated with sports, right? You sometimes you need caffeine to get there, go to the gym, do all the things you need to do. And I know that there's other, like, you know, the types of brands that are like more like financial brands and like private jet brands. You could argue those are associated with sports because those are investors. Those are people that get the athletes to where they're going, et cetera, et cetera. It's hard for me to make the mental connection of DeWalt tools and golf, right?
I don't even care. It's so good. Like, DeWalt, if you're listening to this, DeWalt, and you want to sponsor some fast golfers, we're your people. I will rock that bag like nobody's business.
And I'll never use
another tool that's not DeWalt ever again.
All my tools will be yellow and black, baby. DeWalt for life.
I can't overstate how excited I was when I saw that he was rocking a DeWalt bag on the course. Because like you said, we don't see things like this. Like the closest we've seen to this, like you said, Tiger has the Monster bag. Brooks had a Havsies bag, which is like some kind of chip or something. Like everybody has like these like TaylorMade, Callaway, like all these kind of bags. And then it's just DeWalt. And it's like his main sponsor now. And I love it.
I'm waiting for the hat and the shirt logo to happen. I'm waiting for the DeWalt hat. I think that's going to be...
Well, he had the DeWalt logo on the hat.
Yeah, I mean...
He had that on the hat, but it wasn't like... Like, I'm waiting for like a yellow and black hat.
Yeah, right? Like, just give me the yellow, bright yellow hat with the black DeWalt across. Yeah.
Yellow polo, black pants, yellow shoes. Just give me the whole DeWalt getup.
I need it so bad. I need you to look like a power drill, Patrick, okay? and I'm going to need you to also start playing a little bit faster golf.
A little bit.
Man, was that painful. Do you think that this is something that the PGA Tour should start seriously looking into when it comes to slow play? Like, because there's been slow players in the past. There's going to be slow players moving forward. Do you think that these players who play a slower game, who kind of have a tendency to slow down the entire day in a way, should be penalized for their pace?
Yes, I think it'd be kind of hard to police, but I think they should.
Right.
And the issue is it only ever seems like there's one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like when Bryson was going slow, nothing about Cantlay. Now Bryson's gone. Now we got Cantlay. Like it just seems like there's only one at a time, which makes it even harder because then you're just scapegoating someone and then they're not going to be happy with that. So it's kind of a tough situation for the PGA Tour to be in. You almost have to be like overly strict about it so it doesn't seem like you're just policing one person.
Right. I think the best way to go about regulating something like this is you take the, at the end of the year, you do the math, you take the average of all the rounds of golf that were played, right? You take that median right there in the middle. And that is your time to beat, right? So if you, that's your time to beat. You're not like on a clock. You're not going to get like horned off the course if you don't make it. But if there's enough rounds in a row where you are over that time, so say for three rounds in a row you're over that time, you get penalized. You get docked actual money, monetary funds.
Yeah,
you get fined for slow pace. I think that's relatively reasonable because you've taken the average of all the golfers. Yeah, you're like, this is on average what all of you professionals,
yeah,
play a round of golf in, right? And if for 3 days in a row you can't seem to get under this number, we're going to have to dock your pay.
I get that.
And it, personally, I think it's reasonable. I think it is. So I think that's something that they might do moving forward. There's a chance that it's something they don't do moving forward. I do agree with you a little bit that it's hard to police and not make it seem like you're targeting somebody.
Yeah.
Like if they just,
especially with everything just happening, like the, right, everything that happened this weekend with him, like you'd have to find the right time as well, where you haven't had any issues really with anyone playing slow, but you're just kind of acknowledging the fact that it's been an issue in the past and things are like, kind of like how Major League Baseball did with the pitch clock. Like you just kind of introduce it. You're like, hey, this is what we're thinking about doing. Give it a shot. See how it goes.
Right.
People are going to hate it. It's just how it's going to go. It's going to help a little bit. It's going to hurt a little bit. There's not really much to do about it.
And much like baseball is learning right now, like you're even going to have some of your athletes hate it. But it's just going to be something they're going to have to adapt to. Do you think basketball players loved the shot clock when it came around? They probably hated it, but now it's an integral part of the sport. If they like turned around this week and were like, here's the new rules about pace of play, you know, Patrick Cantlay could definitely be like, okay, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, this is clearly about me. Right? Like, hey, at me in the comments next time, right? But I think it's definitely something that's going to be interesting to continue to watch this season unfold to see if it really is just him or if there's a bunch of different guys who play slowly. And is it always just going to keep happening when it's somebody in front of the leaders? Because that's 2 weeks in a row. It just goes to show, though, like, no, I sure he's playing slow, but it's for a reason, you know?
Yeah, it's not like he's in 25th and he's playing slow.
Yeah, he's not missing top tens, that's for sure. He's still Patty Ice. He's just Patty Ice still in the freezer. Just not melting at all. But to keep moving forward here and to touch back on the Masters a little bit, that's all we had for the RBC. This year was super cool. So the Masters this year was the most watched golf telecast, at least the final round on Sunday, on any network. In the past 5 years, with an average of 12.05 million viewers and an increase of 19% over last year's, CBS reported. So what do you think contributed to this? Because I have one idea of what it is, and I think a lot of people will find it interesting that's the opinion that I'm going with. But I want to see what yours is first.
Honestly, I don't know that I have one, so let's hear yours.
Okay. Honestly, Brooks Koepka. And here's the thing. And I know that I'm outwardly, you know, just not a huge Brooks guy, just not my kind of golfer. But, and like I said last week, I think that golf is better and better off when Brooks Koepka's playing a PGA Tour event and he's Brooks Koepka. He's healthy, right? I think golf is better when Brooks Koepka's playing really good. And that's because your average golfer, your guys like you and I, your frat dudes that get out there, your former athletes, just your average amateur golfers, can relate to a guy like Brooks Koepka because he makes himself relatable to so many different types of golfers. You love athletes who are arrogant and they're like, hey, fuck you, I'm a professional athlete. You love that kind of energy. So do most people our age.
Yeah.
Most dudes our age who like were an athlete or are athletic guys love the cocky attitude in their professional athletes.
Yeah.
And you never get that with a golfer until Brooks Koepka, you know?
Exactly.
So that's why a lot of people love him as a golfer. And then he got hurt a bunch and he wasn't healthy and he wasn't cracking top 10s. He wasn't cracking top 25s. And then he went over to the LIV Tour. No one was even watching him because where are you watching the LIV Tour? The CW.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. Oh. But like now he was back. He was in the fold and he was in the fold at the Masters. He was in the final group against the penultimate top golfer in the world in Jon Rahm. It was mano a mano. That's the kind of shit that like even your average golf fan who maybe didn't watch the Masters last year is like, I think I'm gonna tune into that one.
Yeah. And like you said, he was playing against the best golfer in the world, Jon Rahm. It's a great final pairing. And here's the other thing that I thought of while you were saying all your stuff there. Everybody to a degree enjoys chaos. Sure. There's a scale, obviously, of people who enjoyed like just a little bit of chaos. Like I had 2 eggs for breakfast yesterday. This morning I'm gonna have 3 eggs for breakfast. And I'm just going to be crazy like that. Yeah, there's people like that. And then there's other people that are like, hey, what if Brooks Koepka wins this? And then the PGA Tour just explodes. And we watch it happen live. Like that, I think that is part of the reason that there were so many people watching. Because if Brooks Koepka won that tournament, chaos would have ensued. And whether you're I'm going to have 3 eggs for breakfast this morning person, or I want to watch the PGA Tour explode, you want to watch the PGA Tour explode. Just that's because cool. It's interesting.
Uh-huh. It's going to make
I think that also
TV,
might be part of the reason that it went up.
Oh, yeah. 100%. And honestly, for all those people that wanted PGA Tour versus LIV, boom, there it was on Sunday. You know?
Yeah.
It was kind that's of everything that people... It's everything people wanted, like sans the really dramatic stuff.
Yeah.
But it was LIV versus PGA. It was LIV's literal last winner of their last event in Orlando, one of their best golfers so far this season, and the best golfer on the planet against each other on Sunday in the same group. And the guy who's back and healthy and looks really good is a guy that everybody almost universally loved, you know, especially when it came to the Brooks and Bryson drama. I was always Team Brooks because I hate Bryson, right? Like, even people that don't like Brooks like watching Brooks be good at golf because it's not that he's divisive. He's so almost relatable in a way with the way that he carries himself, you know? So I honestly think that was the main, or maybe not the main, but one of the big reasons why they broke these kind of numbers, you know?
Yeah.
Just because it's everything that everybody kind of wanted on Sunday of the Masters. I think it was perfect, honestly.
Definitely.
Alrighty. One more thing before we look forward to next week. Speaking of LIV Golf, we have a LIV Golf athlete openly speaking out about the LIV schedule. So if there's one thing that we do already know about the LIV schedule is you have 8 events over the course of a summer. And they're separated with 3 weeks in between each event, right? So not a whole lot of golf happening all the time. There's only 8 events. So according to one of the LIV Golf, it's not that he's like a nobody, but he's pretty unestablished, right? Jed Morgan, a 23-year-old Australian PGA champion, who was one of the golfers to join the LIV Golf League on the all Aussie squad of Cam Smith, Mark Leishman, and Matt Jones. He openly said, quote, "For me, the decision about playing less, it was about playing less, making more money. Someone offers anyone a job doing the same thing they're already doing, but less time at the office, and they're going to pay them more. Pretty sure you're going to take it. And something's wrong with you if you didn't." Those were the words of Dustin Johnson, I believe during the Netflix special. But here's what Jed said. He has a pretty opposite opinion of this. He said, quote, "There's obviously quite a bit of time off with the live stuff at the moment, which is a little bit frustrating. You probably need to play a few more events each year to keep yourself sharp." It's a fantastic point, Jed. However, unfortunately, you could not have timed these comments any worse. Because a lot of the really good live golfers just went to the Masters and showed that what you're saying isn't necessarily true. But I'm interested to see what live golf might do with one of their own kind of criticizing the way the schedule is mapped out. Because if they start adding more events, they're just going to become a carbon copy of the PGA Tour, which is what they're going to try to avoid.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to like be offensive, but like, I feel like we can expect some uneasy behavior from the Saudis.
If you know,
I'm obviously not gonna say out loud, but like, I don't think they're gonna take it well. Is what I'm saying.
No, I don't anticipate this going the way he thinks this is gonna go. You know.
Yeah,
definitely some interesting comments for sure. But like, to me, this is more of something that everybody has already been saying, basically. And he's coming out as one of the golfers on the tour, on that tour, and being like, yeah, you know, it's a bit frustrating. Wish I was able to play more events to keep more sharp. But like I said, the only unfortunate bit is that a lot of the Live Tour's upper guys just went to the Masters and showed up. So kind of contradicts everything you just said a little bit, unfortunately. But hey, I hear you. I agreed with you a little bit until I saw what happened at the Masters.
Yeah,
definitely going to be interesting to see what happens with Jed Morgan, perhaps. If he winds up back in Australia, maybe. Who knows? I don't know how Live Tour is going to respond here. Definitely going to be interesting to see if he is still a part of the Live Tour based off these statements. But this is one of a couple recent anti-Live statements from Live golfers. We already talked about the Brooks Koepka thing at the Masters, where you're saying he probably wishes he didn't make that kind of change. But, you know, the Live Tour has yet to have another event since the Orlando one right before the Masters. So we'll see where it goes from here, but I'm interested to see what happens after that. All righty, to continue moving forward, we're going to talk about next week's tournament. We got the Zurich, which is actually a team event last year, won by a team of Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele, which is going to be interesting because, well, we already currently have the drama a little bit of Patrick Cantlay's slow play. And also, they're coming off of being third and fourth at the RBC. I don't know if they're going to be a team again. I'm not sure. I'm going to see if I can't find the power rankings so we can do our little thing here. Here we go.
Got it.
Here we go. I do have it. Our boy Rob put it together. We're all set. So they are a team again. So that's going to be interesting because obviously they're the defending champs of this event, and they're both coming off of pretty damn good golf rounds here at the RBC. So, all right, buddy, you know the drill. Except now you got five extra names, so you got room for teams now, which is going to be super fun. We got five. I'm going to give them to you any sort of list. Here we go. Sam Burns and Billy Horschel. Sahith Theegala and Justin Soo. Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay. Colin Morikawa and Max Homa. And Sung Jae-im and Keith Mitchell.
All right, I'm going to go the group that has Soo in it. Group that has, you said Im, Sung Jae-im?
Im and Mitchell, yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go them. And then I'm going to go Colin. And then I'm going to go Billy. And then I'm going to go with Cantlay and Chalk. Did I nail it?
Play the applause. Play the applause sound effect. You earned it. You earned that applause. You perfect, 100%. Nice. How is it the time where there's extra names? You nail it.
I don't know.
All right, good enough. Well, Rick got it 100% correct. There's not a whole lot of dissecting for me to do. I don't know. Ever. Is it the first time ever?
I think so. It has to be.
We're 100 plus episodes into this, and the first time you've gotten this. That is incredible. Hey, you know, sometimes, right? A broken clock is right twice a day. I'm just saying. Okay. All right. So number five, Sahith Theegala and Justin Sue. Excuse me. With seven top tens this year, Theegala has found a stride no matter the venue or magnitude of the competition. He also won the QBE shootout with Tom Hoge in December. The consistent Sue placed T11 with Doug Gim here in 2021. So two guys that have had some success in team events there. I kind of like where they're at, because if you look at the teams behind them, not a whole lot of big names. This event isn't really known for its very large names, really. But number four, Sungjae Im and Keith Mitchell. Since a pair of T2s last summer, Im hasn't relented, while Mitchell has been potent often enough to be a threat. That won't go away. They're a combined 26 for 30 with eight top 10s this season. Mitchell partnered with Brant Snedker for a T4 in 2021. Yeah, it looks like the both of them are playing some solid golf here in the season so far. 26 for 30 is nothing to scoff at with eight top 10s. Good on them. Sometimes I love golf's ability to have these guys just fly so deeply under the radar and have like really great seasons.
Yeah.
It's crazy how that can happen more often than you would think. Number three, Colin Morikawa and Max Homa. Talk about a team you want to root for. Seems unfair that Cal Berkeley products can tag team, but in a combined five starts and with similarly capable teammates, neither has recorded a top 15 finish in the format. Still, neither has done anything to warrant a quiet week either. Yeah, definitely two guys that I wouldn't pick for their team event prowess by any means. Yeah. Like Colin Morikawa struggled pretty much in the Ryder's Cup, if I remember correctly. So
yeah,
interesting to see how they do as a team here. But hey, they went to the same college. They're around the same age. They're two guys that, you know, just enjoy the game of golf and like golf with each other. So I'm interested to see if them getting together for a tag team here will help their abilities in team events. Number two, Sam Burns and Billy Horschel. No one has fed off the format more than Horschel, and it might be what he needs to shed free from his current funk. These two answered a T4 in their debut as a duo in 2021. With a runner-up last year, Burns recently won the match play. I think these two could have been number one, arguably. I know that Xander and Patrick both won last year, yeah. But Billy Horschel's maybe only a good golfer when it's a team format, and Sam Burns is just coming off of a match play format W, you know? So definitely interested to see how that group plays.
Yeah, I agree. They definitely could have been one. Burns had a hot finish on Sunday with one of the better rounds, minus six. So he's coming off of a little bit of a hot finish. I don't remember if Horschel played this week or not.
I can't remember either. I don't know if he did. Let me take a look at the leaderboard here.
But either way, I think Cantlay and Schauffele just 3 and 4 this week, just a good team overall. I think there's no reason to doubt them winning this week.
Yeah, they're going to be – they're.
Are JT and Jordan Spieth playing this week?
They're not in the top 10, so I'm kind of doubting it.
I was just curious because they're usually a pretty powerful duo. I didn't know if they were playing this week or not.
Yeah, I do not believe they are, because I'm not even seeing in their names in the other teams considered, and they're a pretty powerful duo. So you would think they wind up on this list somewhere.
I think for Bjorn and Olsen and Nikolai Højgaard.
Yeah, you would have to think. Talk about a team you want to follow, though. Those two, huh? How about it? I mean, it's really hard to argue against Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele right now. Obviously, winning last year, two guys coming off of a great tournament at the RBC, two basically masters at the format. Says here the defending champs are proving how hard it is to win, as neither has picked off a victory in 2022-2023. That's still fact over fiction, as we've been dialed in otherwise. Fresh off a third Patrick Cantlay and a fourth Xander Schauffele at Harbortown. Yeah, like we said, coming off of great tournaments, won last year. Really hard to discount those two's ability to be able to win this again. Especially because, you know, I'm looking at the competition, it's not really as stiff as it could have been, you know?
Yeah.
But hey, we'll see how it shakes out. I'm still kind of looking at the Sam Burns, Billy Horschel group and wondering if they could get it done.
That's a good one to watch for sure.
But Rick, unless you have any other golf news, that's going to wrap her up this week.
That is going to be it for me.
Alrighty, folks. As always, thank you so much for listening. We do very much appreciate it. Go ahead and follow us on Instagram at @FromTheTips_pod and on Twitter at @FTT_pod. Go ahead and hit those follow buttons for us, folks, so that you guys can stay tuned with what we do during the summer. Some of our golf rounds, we kind of update you on some things there. And at the end of the summer, like we've talked about before, we are going to both be at the Hack Across America Golf Tournament. So there's going to be a bunch of content coming out of that weekend. So you got to be following to see the content, folks. You got to. Also, again, thank you so much for listening. We appreciate it greatly. And we out.
Thanks, guys. See you later.